Ladies and gentlemen, you are now entering the Decent Christian Talk podcast. Enjoy.
Decent Christian Talk, episode number 80.
80.
We have hit round numbers. 80. That's,
Who's the most famous number 80 that you ever remember?
There's Chris Carter.
Chris Carter.
Isn't he 80?
He comes to mind. I think. I don't know. That's a tough one.
Is Jerry Rice 80 or is he 88?
All right. We'll skip that part.
Anyway. So, yeah. Number 80, thank you guys so much for joining us. We've got a great show for you today. Randy Stonehill is on the show today.
What?
Yes. From the Jesus Movement back in the day all the way to now, he is on the Decent Christian Talk podcast. I'm fairly sure. I'm not guaranteed sure, but I'm fairly sure this is his very first podcast interview ever.
I think it probably is.
Yes.
I mean, you keep track of who's interviewed and where, and yeah, I think this is probably his first.
Yeah, so this is a big deal, guys. Randy Stonehill was with Larry Norman when the Jesus Movement came out, and he was very instrumental and is one of the pretty much founding fathers of what we know as the Christian rock and what that evolved into.
And we talk about that a lot.
Yes. And, you know, this is one of those things where when we're setting it up, when we're actually doing it, it's very hard just not to smile the entire time because we just can't believe it's happening.
Yeah. A little disclaimer for this episode. It was
hot.
We're going to talk about it more on the bonus episode, but Mr. Stonehill insisted on no air conditioning because he didn't want it to mess with our audio. And so this is the longest interview I've ever done. By the end of this interview, I don't know if you can hear in my voice, I'm trying to speed it up because we're sitting in a trailer and it's starting, I'm looking at the thermostat, it's starting to get up to close to 90 degrees in there. And so, yeah, we'll talk about that more on the bonus episode, but this is a long interview, so we should probably just hop right into it.
But before we do that,
speaking of Patreon,
if you want to check out our bonus episode, you can head on over to patreon.com/decentchristiantalk. For as low as $1 a month, you can join our team and you can gain access to these bonus episodes exclusively through Patreon. And we do talk more in depth about the setup of the interview and how that happened, and then the interview itself, how that went.
Some of the stories are more fun than others, and I would say this is probably one of my favorite ones.
Yes, definitely. And you can check that out at patreon.com/decentchristiantalk. For as low as $1 a month, you can join our team, and that money goes towards paying some of our bills, keeping us online, and keeping our equipment updated and
fresh,
working. So we can continue to put out these shows for you guys. And we do that with your help, and we thank you so much for those of you that have helped. People like Leslie and Jody and Maria and Lorena, you guys are great. We couldn't do it without you.
Thank you.
So we're heading into the interview with Randy Stonehill, and this is...
Legend.
This is fun. We're just going to get right into it. Without further ado, here is our interview with Randy Stonehill.
All right, hit that horn, babe. Let's dance.
Down the wild frontier. Yeah.
Like a child who dreams of flying. So let's just get right into it. You were a very instrumental part of the Jesus Movement back in the 70s. I think your first album was 1971.
That's right.
So you were right there in the middle. Just talk a little bit about what that was like.
It was just the wild frontier. I was wandering around Hollywood with the late, great Larry Norman, who was a wonderful talent and a great visionary. I'd become a believer. Actually, I graduated from high school. I was from his hometown, and so I'd met him. He said, listen, you know, my sister says you're very talented. When you graduate from school, why don't you come south and I'll show you the ropes. So I fled the sleepy suburbs of San Jose, Northern California, and he graciously had me come and stay with him. And after Jesus came crashing into my life, the very day I left home, the natural heart response was to start writing songs, which is the way I've always expressed my worldview. So I started writing songs about this Jesus who changed my vision of the world and my vision of my life forever. And I remember, like I said, wandering around Hollywood with Larry, and Larry was a brilliant guy. And he'd be kind of pontificating about culture and music and how Jesus was profoundly relevant to every facet of things. We were just playing the rock and roll we love, but writing about hope, writing about God. And I remember him looking at me one day, and he said, "Randy, I just know God's up to something with this music. It's the voice of our generation. Kids that would never darken the door of a church, they'll listen to rock and roll. Why can't we sing and write about God's love?" For our generation, I mean, who says we can't? And we both laughed, and we thought, well, everybody says we can't, yeah. You know. But he said, "I'm telling you, man, it's a movement. It's you, and it's me, which makes us, and we. You see, it's a movement."
Yeah.
And we just started laughing because we were inspired but lonely. I mean, we just were going, doesn't anybody else get this? And then, slowly but surely, other voices started popping up. You know, we heard about Randy Matthews from the Midwest. We heard about Mike Johnson from New York. We heard about the amazing Phil Keggy from Youngstown, Ohio. Mm-hmm. And then I remember we were in a recording studio in Hollywood. And this was the revelation knowledge moment, if I may say, my friends. We went into the studio to do some demos, and the engineer looked at us. This is probably 71, 72. And he said, "So, you guys play rock and roll, but it's about Jesus or something." And we said, "Well, yes, it's very much about Jesus." And he said, "Oh, that's interesting." He said, "You know, there was a group in here earlier this morning, and it's a similar vibe to yours. I mean, it's more of a polite kind of folk rock deal. I think they're from like 30 minutes south of here in Costa Mesa. Anyway, but it's like I said, similar point of view." And they left a test pressing. This is back in the days of vinyl, right? Yeah. So they left a test pressing. Do you want to hear it? We said, yeah, put it on. So the guy put it on, and we heard, "Little country church on the edge of town." It was Love Song, which is, you know, they were the house band, if you will, the worship band for the First Calvary Chapel. But Larry looked at me, I looked at him, and he went, "See, it is a movement. We're not crazy, man."
Yeah.
Okay, we're fun at parties, but we're not crazy, you know. And so, like I said, that it was the wild frontier, and just watching the Lord slowly but surely raise up people, and then, continue to open doors for us to share the reality of His life and love with a hurting, needy culture. Man, it was amazing experience.
So it sounds like you focused more on the people that were embracing you, but you also met some resistance as well. I spoke to Petra yesterday, and they said people were picketing almost every single show they did, mm-hmm. and that people were saying rock and roll is from the devil. And how did that feel where you and Larry are sitting here saying this is Jesus moving, and then people that are supposed to be following saying, hey, this is God's work, people are coming to the Lord, now these people are saying you are not part of the church, this is from Satan?
Right. Well, it turned us into thoughtful apologists, which is not to say that we went around going, I'm sorry, not that kind of apologist. I'm saying we really, it made us think through and pray through who we were, why we were doing what we were doing, probably with more clarity than we would have if it had all been smooth sailing. But indeed, like you say, that was a season where culture was looking at all the damage that had come out of the 60s and rock and roll and, you know, the failed Summer of Love, and they're going, this can't be healthy. And they were throwing out the baby with the bathwater. It was a serious turning point for me, because, like I said, I learned patience. I learned to have a servant's heart, which is crucial. The turning point really for me, where I realized that I had a calling more than just a desire for a career, was that one night I did some concert event in Southern California, and these people just surrounded me at the end of the night, and they were just so hostile. They just said, your hair's too long, your music's too loud, your pants are too tight, you have way too much fun, you're just a hot dog. What do you think you're doing? Cheapening the timeless truth of the gospel with this garbage music. And I just thought, my goodness. And many of these were believers, actually. And I think the very people that I thought would be catching the vision of a new voice for a new generation, so to speak, they're taking pot shots at me. And I drove back to Larry's place. I think I was staying with him at the time. And I remember I got out of my car, and I leaned up against the door, and I was looking up at heaven. And I said, you know, Lord, I think I'm done. I don't need this nonsense. I mean, I know that you're real, and I'll never forget that. And I always try to put a good word in for you when it makes sense. But I can't, you know, I'm good. You made me good. I came to town to play rock and roll and see the world, and I think I'm just going to go do that. And, but like I said, I'll mention you from time to time. And as I was turning away in my heart, I could almost hear the whisper of the Spirit saying, well, you can go if you want. And you very well might have a modicum of success. But I promise you, you will never be at peace, because you are now a man who knows too much. And it will haunt you every night when you walk off stage having left those people with nothing more than a good time. I heard that in my heart, and I looked up at heaven and I said, wait a minute, you mean I've got to do this? Wait a minute, but it's a calling. I mean, I get to do this. Oh no, I got to do this?
Yeah.
Wait, but I get to do this. In other words, I really got the vision. I went, oh, and the Lord never said it would be easy, but He did say that He would use a willing vessel, you know. And so that's when I really jumped in with both feet and said, all right, this is not just a vocational whim. This is a calling. And God never said it would be easy, but He also promised that I would never be alone. So, all right, then. I'm just going to do this, good times or bad times. I'm going to do this, Lord Jesus, until you tell me to stop.
Okay. Where is that calling missing in today's Christian music? Where you, like you said, you knew too much. You didn't have the chance to you were doing one or the other. Now you've paved the way for almost this entire industry. Has Christian music become complacent? Where's the jumping in with 2 feet that you guys had to do?
Well, I can only speak to that question broadly, because the good news is that indeed what started out as a fledgling grassroots movement has exploded into a billion-dollar industry. So there's infrastructure, there's a way to market your stuff, and there's and there's the internet, and it's a whole different world. So that's good news to an extent, in that it can make the road much easier. Simply to say, it's a very different world now, and because contemporary Christian music has become a massive industry. Anyway, so to complete that thought, the industry has made things, it's a good news, bad news scenario, because it's made the walk easier, so it doesn't necessarily challenge the depth of your commitment. However, I think, so there are a lot of talented people out there, and they're having a good time, and you hope that God will use them. I think that there are others, though, who, if they're really serious about their lives and their craft, that God will galvanize that vision, and really let them know it's not just a career, it's a calling, and the mission field is everywhere. So some people get it, some people don't. I listen to some stuff and I think, it's kind of derivative, and it's, I don't know, not a lot of depth, not a lot of passion. But I listen to others and I think, well, now there you go. There's some of the new generation is kicking up the dust. So, we just trust that God is in his heaven, and he loves his children, and he's the giver of the gifts, and he's going to raise some people up to take the mantle after the old guard are gone. When I'm there on my rocking chair.
Did you know when you were kicking up your own dust back in the 70s what you were starting, or were you just answering the calling?
No, actually, I myself in particular, of which we speak, I was just doing this a day at a time. I just knew that this is what God had called my heart to do, and I had the tools. It's an interesting question, because I mean, when we started out, guys like Larry Norman and Phil Keggy, and we thought, well, we're doing, we're seeing music speak to our generation, but we can't second guess God. This could very well be over next week. I might have to actually go back to junior college. Uh-oh. I hate that idea. I just went to the great college of life. But anyway, we thought this could be over in a week, it could be over in a month, it could be over in a year. What we're going to do is just cling to the hem of Christ's garment, take this day by day, mile by mile, and just see what he'll do with it. I'm not going to insist that he blesses our agenda, And so, and then I look over my shoulder and I think, oh my goodness, here I am. Almost 50 years later. I've been doing this ever since I was 18. Wow. I'm a remarkably well-preserved 29. Wait a minute. That's not right. Oh, I'm teasing.
How did your peers react? People that were playing music at that time, rock and roll music that were big. Did you ever cross paths with anyone? And how did they feel that you're playing Christian music? Were you infringing on their territory, or were they supportive of what you were doing?
You mean some of the mainstream rockers?
Yes.
Well, actually, I bumped into almost everyone you can imagine through 40 years of being in airports. I mean, everyone from Chuck Berry to the late great Glenn Frey of the Eagles. It's everybody. And I think actually some of them thought, well, I don't know what this is, but it's got. It's buoyant, and it's
it seems sincere. I think others would kind of give us the stink eye, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, I heard stories about, like, when Barry Maguire became a believer, you know, some of his peers going, oh, man, I can't believe it. That's Barry Maguire. I mean, he hung out with the Beatles, and he did Eve of Destruction. He's like, Nike's like a Jesus freak or something. What's up with that, you know? Mm-hmm. I think for most, really, I guess the shorter answer is that we felt like raised by wolves, you know? We were in this weird no-man's land quite often where we were too rocking for the church but too sacred for the sinners, so to speak.
Yeah.
And we just didn't fit anywhere. We just went, I don't care. At the end of the day, the only person's opinion that matters is the Lord Jesus. So we're just going to do this. And sometimes you just feel like going, hey, come back. Hey, wait, hey, you might even like, oh, okay, never mind. You know, it was a weird sort of rock and roll orphans.
So if you could go back in time, wise 29-year-old Randy Stonehill, go back to your 18-year-old self in a time machine, what would you tell yourself?
Oh, there are so many punchlines.
Besides lottery numbers and...
No. Get a day job, I'm telling you. Get yourself a 401k and health insurance. No, I'm teasing. Actually, what I would tell myself is to really be intentional about putting God first in all things, great and small. I was young. The Lord was flinging doors open. It was a real privilege, but it was also a distraction. I think I just matured spiritually much more slowly than I might have. And that's the heart of the matter, because that's going to impact your personal walk and that's going to impact your artistry. I would say, get yourself, if I could go back in time and talk to a much younger Randy, I'd say, oh, Randall Evans Stonehill, you will avoid so much wasted time. You will avoid so much heartbreak if you will just obey God. Put him first, dig in spiritually, and then the music that you love is going to adorn a message that's going to have much more substance and heat and life. I think I just God in his grace has used me, you know, through all the ups and downs of my life, and it really is God's grace. But I can't help but feel that that it could have been much more. And so I would say this to you and all the listeners, the key definition of success is just be a trusting, obedient child. That's, and I can go on. I don't know if you want me to.
You can go on as long as you want.
All right. Well, then let me tell you this. You know, and then when I was 8, I wrote a lovely little polka number. You know, oh no, we can't find the off switch. Uh-oh. We can't make him stop.
You get the duct tape for your mouth.
It's the duct tape. Get the duct tape, like I said on stage. No, I would just say this, that it really is. If I could go back in time, I would say, oh, the key to everything is obedience, and let us remember who it is that's calling us to obey. It's the one who knows you on a cellular level. It's the lover of our souls. We need to... Actually, I think the devil has hijacked that word. And, you know, he's in the Bible, he's called the father of lies. And that's because...
He's the father of lies.
You stole my punchline, Josiah. But
I'm sorry. No, I thought you were letting me finish.
I should.
No,
we're having interview fellowship here. But yeah, he's the father of lies, and so he's convinced the culture that God is some cosmic bully up there in the celestial realms who wants to push us around and rob our joy. Nothing could be farther from the truth. We need to embrace the rightness, the power, the joy, and the liberty, that's liberty, of obeying God Almighty, who loves us with a holy love, who created us. Life without obedience to God is not freedom.
it's profound, tragic, lethal lostness. That's my message. That's really the heart of my message these days, in much of my writing and in what I do on stage.
Okay. Now you've mentioned some of the legends of Christian music that you've been with. Do you have any good Keith Green stories, maybe, or Larry Norman, or anyone that you've been with, just a good story that you could share?
Certainly.
Give me a moment.
Let's see. I think about Keith Green and I just have to smile.
This he was guy. Taken too soon.
Yeah. I have to concur. He was 28. He'd been a believer.
I'm 28.
Yeah. I mean, you know, he'd been a believer, I think, a mere 8 years. But then you can see what God will do with a passionate, willing soul. I mean, the guy, his music still cuts and speaks some 36 years after his departure. But Keith was just such an intense guy, brilliant. I don't think I've ever seen anyone as relieved to find out where hope lived than Keith Green. But you know, like all people, he wanted hope and he wanted heaven, but he wanted it on his own terms. So when I first met him, we immediately started having these intense spiritual conversations. Excuse me. And, you know, and he, we just have to, things would get pretty heated because we were both young and cocky and immature. And I knew, you know, experience in coming heart to heart with Christ will always outgun anybody's argument. I was just saying, Keith, Jesus is exactly who he claims to be, man. Lover of our souls, you know. And he said, well, I believe he was a good teacher and I try to follow his teachings. I'm thinking, oh, that must be very frustrating. Because, you know, it's like the Apostle Paul said, I mean, to paraphrase, the very thing I want to do so often I don't do, the thing I don't want to do, I end up doing. Oh, wretched man that I am, who will save me from this body of death? It's the holy blood of Jesus. So Keith being Keith, as I knew him, I knew that he would take a dare. And this is so precious to me because it's such an indicator of how God is so personal and he'll use anything and everything. You know, even in your little flawed life with all the growing pains, I figured out that Keith would take a dare. And I remember one day, we were having one of these heated... I'd go over to his house to write songs with him. And it was really a lot of fun. And he'd invite me to jump up on stage at the Blah Blah Cafe, where he played every Wednesday night. And it was just great, you know. But eventually,
Ultimately.
Thank you. I hear the voice of my bride. Ultimately, the conversation would end up getting back to Jesus. And things, just like I said, would just get heated. And sometimes I'd want to just like get him in a headlock and just go, would you just, you're so opinionated and you're so stubborn and you're so cocky. You know, you just drive me crazy. And then I would look over in the corner and there would be Melody. And I was there the day he met her, actually. So I'd see Melody with this sweet, kind of sad smile on her face, like, now, Randy, you know that he loves you. And you know you love him. And I'm thinking, and she's going, it's like you could almost read her mind. You know that the truth lies somewhere in the middle. Maybe you're just not sharing your theology to his satisfaction, something, I don't know. And so I would think, all right, if she can put up with him, I guess I can put up with him. But this one day, after this little argument we had, I said, you know what, Keith? I go to this cool little Bible study on Thursday nights. A lot of musicians go there,
Even Debbie Boone goes there, because I knew the Boone family. And I said, listen, man, I just dare you. I dare you to go and check it out. And it's not a cult. They're not going to, like, tie you to a chair and put ice cubes on your feet until you utter the magical incantation or something, you know. And I said, but I dare you, Mr. Opinion, go check this out. Because in the back of my mind, I thought, maybe there's someone with more... Maybe Keith and I are too close, and he sees me with all my flaws and growing pains. Maybe he needs to hear the gospel with someone that really has a grasp of the word. Maybe that'll turn the tide. And he looked at me, and he kind of set his jaw, and he said, yeah? Oh, yeah? Okay. Well, where is it? I'll go. And I said, good. I took a little piece of paper, and I wrote, okay, here's the address. 7 o'clock Thursday night. I said, now listen, I got to go out on the road to do some concerts. I'll be back in about a week. So when I come back, I want to know what you and Mel thought of it. And I came back a week later and found out that he'd gone to the Bible study that Thursday night. And at the end of the study, when Ken Gullickson, who ended up starting the first part of the Vineyard Church movement, Ken Gullickson was heading up this study. He said, when Ken Gullickson asked people if they really wanted relationship with Christ, if they felt like the Lord was speaking to their hearts, he said, just raise your hand. Ken told me later, he said, man, Keith's hand shot up like a bottle rocket. I mean, he was like, yes, I want relationship with Christ. I'll do anything, you know. So I just went, well, thank you, God, for letting me, I guess, plant seeds in my own awkward way. And thank you that by the power and presence of the Spirit, you've watered them. And then I watched the Lord just take this guy on a fast track, you know.
He was so talented.
Oh, yeah, he was incredible. And the last time I saw him, actually, was at the Christian Booksellers Convention, some books and records, a big annual international thing, at the Anaheim Convention Center. And I found out that he'd moved to Texas. His ministry was just exploding, and it was just hysterical, Josiah, because there I am, I'm promoting my next record or my new record, because I'd signed with Word Records, and all of a sudden I look and come. Sauntering down the aisle is Keith Green with all of his kind of Jewish boy, way too much curly, you know, brown hair, but he's got this big white Stetson cowboy hat on, because he's in Texas now. and he was surrounded by a bunch of his interns, all these people that he'd brought on to work with him. So it was kind of like Elvis and the TCB boys, you know. He's walking at me, big smile on his face, and I said, Keith, how are you doing, man? And he goes, oh, really good. It's great to see you. How's it going? I said, it's going great, man. And he said, well, listen, man, you know, God's doing wonderful things. You gotta fly out to Texas and come spend some time with me. I said, you know, I fly quite often. Dallas, Fort Worth, is the connecting hub for flights from the East Coast to the West and vice versa. So I'm in Dallas at the airport couple times a month. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll take a puddle jumper next time I can. If I can find some time, I'll build in some days. Take a puddle jumper out to Lindale, and I'll come and see you and see the ministry. And I never saw him again.
Wow.
Yeah. So. But man, what a blessing it was, just to know him and to be some part of his life and his work. There has never been, I've never met anyone before or since Keith Green. I mean, like him, you know. Let me try that again. I've never met anyone like Keith Green before that season with him or after. I mean, the guy was, yeah, he was amazing. So, well, I hope he's smiling down from heaven, you know.
Do you have any Keith Green type dares? Just... We'll turn the air conditioning on right after. I know, but do you have any dares for the listeners that you kind of threw down for Keith?
Yeah, I have a. I do. I have a. I have a. I think a special dare, which is dare to believe that you can take him, take God at his word, and dare to abandon your agenda for his agenda. Just hold it with a loose grip and say, Lord, I'm just going with you. If you actually, you love me with a holy love, you contain time and space. You're right here with me. And you actually remember my name. I just want to go with you. I would dare people to just surrender their hearts fully on a daily basis and watch what God will do, because he keeps his promises. Let God, you know, I dare people through trust and obedience to let God take you on the great adventure that only the wind of the wings of the Holy Spirit can carry you on. That's why we're here, and nothing less than that will ever quench your longing. I promise you, nothing that the world offers could ever come close to matching the hope and the life and the peace and the sense of meaning that he brings to your life, that Jesus offers, because we were built by him and for him. But he won't twist your arm, but he's there daring you to come to him. Drop your toxic pride, stop playing God yourself, and he says, come to me. Aren't you tired? Come to me. And you see the nail-scarred hands of Jesus, and you realize that that's how passionate the Lord is about the human soul.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for your time. It has been an honor.
Oh.
My mama used to sing this song.
Shut-dee-doe, keep out the devil.
Oh, Papa used to sing it too.
Shut-dee-doe, keep the devil in the night.
Jesus called and took them home.
Shut-dee-doe, keep out the devil.
And so
that was our interview with Randy Stonehill. It was hot, literally and figuratively. A lot of stuff to talk about.
That was... I don't know, that I'm speechless when it comes to just the history of the entire Christian music industry. And to sit there with someone that, I mean, I was not old enough to grow up listening to him when he was putting music out, but I grew up listening to him because of our dad.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things that we like to do on this show is highlight some of those artists from the past, because I don't know, for some reason Christian music just doesn't seem to be able to, I don't know, respect and honor those artists the way that they should. And that, I've kind of felt...
There's not really a Christian Music Hall of Fame.
There is, I mean, there's a Dove Award, like, Hall of Fame kind of thing, but there's, I don't know, it's like, so like in mainstream music, you see Bruce Springsteen still being able to fill up arenas and do that, but guys like Stephen Curtis Chapman still can't. Like, for some reason, he can't do that still.
Well, a lot of people don't know.
And that wasn't even that long ago.
I know Randy even commented off interview. He said, a lot of those kids out there maybe didn't know who I was, but we still had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And so that he's fully aware that people now might not know how big of an impact he had on the industry, but at the same time, he put on a great concert. But that's just another thing where, like you said, there's not really, you said there's the Dove Awards, but what else is there?
There's not much else.
There's not the Christian media to, I don't know, kind of immortalize some of these people like they deserve.
And I know a lot of those guys don't feel like they deserve it, or they don't really want that. I mean, because that's not
why they're doing it.
It's not why they do it, and I understand that. But at the same time, you still have to give respect to where it's due. And these guys blazed the trail when it came to Christian music, and they did it. And they did it on a road that was unpaved. It was
a little rocky, a little bumpy.
It was, you know, they got all kinds of protests. And I mean, if you guys would read the Larry Norman book that came out last year that we covered on this show by Gregory Thornberry, it goes into depth about some of those protests and what those artists went through during that time from the church.
Yeah, the people that are supposed to be on their side.
Yeah, and that's just, you know, we still kind of go through that today with a lot of, you know, some things. But anyway, you know, it was also fun to hear him talk about Keith Green.
That was really cool. Shout out to Ryan for kind of feeding me that question.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Ryan Watching, for that. And but yeah, we'll talk more about that on the bonus show if you're a Patreon subscriber. But if you haven't checked out Randy Stonehill, you can find him anywhere where you can stream music. He's definitely worth diving into. He is very instrumental in Christian music today. You might not know it, but him and Larry Norman and Keith Green, I mean, their fingerprints are still very much on what you listen to today.
Yes.
So, we are going to wrap it up. Thank you guys so much for joining us. You can find us on decentchristiantalk.com. Of course, our Patreon page, patreon.com/decentchristiantalk, if you want to hear more about this Randy Stonehill episode. You can find exclusive content on there. You can also check us out on Twitter, DC Talk Act 2. Instagram, DC Talk Podcast. We are on Facebook, Decent Christian Talk, and a Decent Christian Talk Podcast discussion page.
Yes.
We're also on iTunes. We're on Spotify. We're on YouTube. Wherever you listen to us, please subscribe. Leave a nice review if you can. I think we're over 3,000 subscribers on YouTube.
That's wild.
Yes. And still growing. And that's thanks to you guys. Hey, one of our favorite things that you do is sharing the show with a friend. And if you know a friend that grew up listening to Randy Stonehill, we'd encourage you to share this episode with a friend. And check out Randy Stonehill. I know he has a Patreon page, too. If you go on Randy Stonehill's Facebook page, you can find out more about that. Help support him as an artist. And maybe get new music from him, too.
Hey.
So, we will check you out next time.
Don't forget to tip your waiters and waitresses. Thanks.
Peace.
Don't forget to tip your waiters and waitresses. Thanks.